Welcome to the National Community Church Podcast. We're thrilled to be able to share this weekend message with you from Pastor Joel Schmidgall, our executive pastor at NCC. If you'd like to subscribe, find us on iTunes or go to theaterchurch.com.
I just wanted to start today with a question. How do you know that somebody is a disciple of Christ? Maybe you are following Christ, and whatever you call it, if you call it a follower of Christ or a Christian or whatever that language is that you use, how do you know that somebody is a follower of Christ? So I just decided to Google it and check out what people thought about this question, and here's what I found. First one was this. They said, people will know because I tell them. Makes sense, right? And then somebody said, they'll know because I don't cuss, I don't drink, I don't dance. Whew. Anybody else grow up in one of those homes right there? You know, you don't have premarital sex because it could lead to dancing, right? And that's the home. A few others, I think. I saw, they'll know because I'm a good person. They'll know because I talk about God, because of public worship. They'll know because of my actions. They'll know because I wear a cross. So half of the NFL apparently are disciples of Christ, right? On the field. So here's how Jesus answers this question. We see in John chapter 13, it's verses 34 and 35. He says this. He says, a new command I give you. Love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. It's not our rhetoric. It's not our deeds. It's not our discourse. It's not our arguments. It's not our bumper stickers. It's not our politics. It's not what we wear around our necks or on our ears. But we know that our community will know us as Christ's disciples by our love for one another. There's something that's so attractional about true love, and it speaks to the nature of God. I think about when Nina and I are in our home and we'll hug in our house. And if Renzi is anywhere near us, she will immediately run towards us and she'll slide in between our legs. And she can, you know, she'll be watching a movie in the other room and doing it. And it's a movie she has begged to watch. She has cried to watch this movie. And we're in the kitchen. We start hugging. She will run out of her chair into the kitchen to slide in between us. And at first I thought she's trying to break us up. But then I realized she's just trying to get a piece of the pie. There's something that is attractional about true love. Jesus, he kind of throws me off at the beginning of this passage because he says, a new command I give you, love one another. And I'm thrown off because I'm thinking, is that really a new command? Like, I think I've heard that in the Gospels. In fact, I remember that back in the Old Testament. God, you ripped off God. I mean, he's like get some of your own. This is not a new command. But Jesus, he says it's a new command, not because of the content, but because of the measure. And so I want to look at this this morning because Jesus, he defines a new measure to what love is. And we see this progression of understanding of godly love and its measure in the scriptures. In John chapter 4, verse 7, we see we're called to love one another. And then Jesus ratchets up the intensity of the measure a little bit more. And we see in Mark chapter 12, verse 31, he says, love your neighbor as yourself. So it's not just love, but the measure in which you are to love somebody else should be the same measure that you love yourself. And then Jesus does it again in our passage this morning. He ratchets up the measure another level. He says, don't just love somebody else, or don't just love one another. And don't just love somebody else as you would love yourself, but this time, love as I have loved you. The measure in which I have loved you, because he knows that we love others imperfectly. He knows that we love ourselves imperfectly, don't we? He says, no, I am modeling. I am giving you the example. I am loving you, and this is the calling that I'm giving to you. I want to talk about three actions of how Christ loved us, of how he came to know us and how we should be known within our community. His love was incarnational. His love was relational. His love was sacrificial. And there was the coming to, there was the being with, and there was the dying for. It's a prepositional gospel, if you will. To, with, for. But the first one is coming to. It's the incarnational. The word says in John chapter 1, it says that the word, that Jesus was made flesh and he dwelt among us. He came to be with us. Jesus came from his home to our home. He came from heaven to earth. He came from God's glory to be a part of our story. Remember back in college, went and helped out at a local youth group at the church and decided to commit there and had a great time. Got to invest in a group of guys and middle schoolers. And this was a great group of guys. But there was one of them, this kid was kind of off the wall. And he got some crazy in him. It was like he had an IV of sugar hooked up at all times in his veins. And he couldn't sit still for 2 minutes. He couldn't look at you when you talked to him. I mean, I called it the fly syndrome. It was like a fly was always flying around when you talked to him because he was just doing this. Are you hearing me? Oh, yeah, I'm here. And then, you know, it's like you start looking in other places. And I know, like, if you're a parent of middle schoolers, you're like, actually, that's every middle school boy that we ever know. But I'm telling you, he had like another level. He was an overachiever in middle school boyness. And so Jamie and my buddy and I went over to his house one day and we said, man, let's go hang out at his place. And so we went over, we walked into his house and everything just made sense. Because we walk in, we start talking to his mom. And then there's arguments going on here, and there's things bouncing off the wall over here, and the furniture is strewn all over the place, and then there's video games like way up loud over here, and it's like this mass chaos going on in the house. And we walked out and looked at each other, and we go, oh, now it all makes sense. What's funny is I'm like, man, I wonder if people that come to our house walk out and go, oh. All makes sense now, but I gained a deeper understanding into who he was. Education, and there's social services movement that is built around this idea of home visits, because there's such a deep understanding that is gained of a child or a family in need when you go and consistently visit and see their place. And go in their space. You see what's happening. It's the reason I love going on Capitol Hill and meeting with our Hill staffers, because I see them in their environment. I see who they are in their environment. When you go to somebody's place, you gain a greater understanding of why they are the way they are, right? God gives you insights and observations. I remember a shift that happened in a relationship with one of our neighbors when Nina went over to a Hanukkah party that they were throwing. And she went over and she stepped into their world. And she validated them and she got to know their traditions and learned some of their history. And something happened. It kind of changed the course of relationship. And I would say I'm grateful to that neighbor for inviting us into their space. And they were inviting to us before we were inviting to them. And so one, our neighbor crossed the line for us. But number two, Nina went into their world and it changed the conversation. There was a different reciprocation. They were so much more interested in our faith, in our family, in our church, in our experience. And so it's opened up relationship because she stepped out. When you go to somebody's place, you validate his or her importance to you. Nina going to that party validated the importance of her friendship with our neighbor. And we have a small safety team here at Barracks Row at the Miracle Theater, and they help out with different incidents that happen. You might have even seen one recently. And so really grateful for Tommy Hinson and for the team. And man, I'm grateful for you guys. And now before, a couple years ago, before the safety team was there, I was the one-man safety team. And so there was a week, and there's three consecutive weeks where some kind of major things happened. If you want to hear a good story, ask me sometime. I don't have a time right now, but the fourth week came, and I'm looking for things by then, and sure enough, here it comes. And so there's a guy out front. He's angry. He's upset. He laces into a cussing tirade, and he had that look like he was ready to clock somebody, you know? And so what do? I get alerted. I come out, and I just decide, okay, I'm going to walk towards him very slowly. Before I did, I grabbed two donuts in each hand. That was my weapon of choice. Figured that was better than a couple of hot coffees. That could go really bad, right? Grab two donuts, because I've seen your kids go to that donut table. They look possessed when they go, but when they come out and they look like these sweet little angels, right? All because these magical circles of sugar that you give to them. So, okay, this is what I'm going to do. So I go over and I introduce myself. What's your name? Tells me his name. And then I say, all right, my name's Joel Schmidgall. My kids call me Daddy. My wife calls me Honey. You can use any of those names. And he said, and I saw he gave me a glimpse right there. I'm like, I got my hook. And so I jumped in and listen, I know, you know, sometimes people say things to me and it just gets under my skin, you know, and it really irks me. And you ever feel that way? And it was like, it just set him off. And let me tell you something about people. And he just for 5 minutes gave me this discourse on the horrible nature of mankind, right? And then he started into his story. He started to share where he came from, and he started to share some of his story. And we got to the end of it, and then I jumped in, and we had a prayer, and things calmed down, and he took a walk. And it's amazing what can happen. When you step into somebody's place, you can actually help them go to a new place. Sometimes somebody just needs to be listened to, just needs to be heard, or understood, or known. This guy just needed me to step in and get to know him. When somebody is known, it changes the temperature of a room, doesn't it? It changes the air around us. Are we seeking to know and to be known? I like the way Dr. Foth talks about the incarnation. He says, the incarnation is Jesus leaving his place, coming to our place, taking our place so that we can go back to his place. It's Jesus. He comes and he doesn't just go to the religious, right? He goes to the hurting and the stranger. He goes to the unknown. He goes to the person that nobody else will go to. How are we stepping out of our comfort zone to go to the person that nobody else goes to? What bridges are we crossing to go meet that person, to go help that person, to go be kind to that person? Let me just pose a couple of questions, application questions to close this point. When's the last time you entered someone else's world to show them love? So not them entering your world or crossing your path, but when have you entered their world? When have you become an interruption of love in somebody else's path? What bridge do you need to cross to build a relationship with someone unlike you? Maybe it's this week, just taking somebody to lunch, getting to know them a little bit. Here's a question that Nina and I ask. What friendships are you pursuing with people in different seasons of life than you? So a different marital status or a different age or maybe a different race, maybe a different economic class, a political view. What friends do we have that don't have faith? So Jesus, he was incarnational, but he was also relational. So there was the coming to, and then there was being with. We see in Matthew chapter 9, verse 11, the Pharisees accused Jesus to the disciples, and they say, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? In Matthew 4:19, it's when Jesus calls Peter and Andrew, and he says, come with me, and I'll make you a new kind of fisherman, out of you. And it goes all the way to the cross. Luke chapter 23, verse 43, after Jesus forgives the man dying of his sins, he gives him the ultimate peace. He says, today you will be with me in paradise. I really enjoy the neighborhood that we live in. And it's a very diverse collection of people. And it's interesting, though, because in one season, there started to be two clusters of people kind of separating. And they were separating around race. And I think one thing that hopefully that we are continuing to learn here at NCC is this, that there's a big difference between being integrated and being intimate, right? And so we found ourselves in an interesting place because we were the only people that were in both clusters. And so we had a couple years ago, we had this block party. And at the block party, there arose some tension among a couple of clusters of people. And you know what it was built around? It was built around musical selection. What the DJ was playing. And you had one group that was more interested in some old R&B and soul music. And then you had another group that was interested in more rock and alt rock and classic rock. And I don't know if you can guess, you know, which way that was going. I don't know. But so we decided to step in and we just said, okay, we'll bring some Bieber and make everybody mad. And then there will be unity among all people, right? And actually, you know, Jackson 5 fixes everything, fixes any musical discussion. Nobody hates Little Michael, right? I mean, some A, B, C. Come on. It's easy as 1, 2, 3. Here we go. Do, re, mi, A, B, C.
1, 2, 3.
Baby, you and me, girl. I mean, nobody hates Little Michael. Are you kidding me? He will fix any musical discussion. We found this. We had two groups of people that were around each other, but they were not with each other. I've learned something, that there are some things that I did not appreciate until I was with some friends, until I was with some neighbors. And there's a reason that our kids get birthday gifts from our neighbors. There's a reason. We just took prom photos with Darius, one of our neighbors. There's a reason we pulled off some of the wall between our house and our neighbor's house so our kids can play together, because we don't want to just be around our neighbors. We want to be with our neighbors, alongside getting to know them. Years ago, we had a couple of dealers that actually lived right next door to our house, and kind of an awkward situation. And there was a bit of a standoffish kind of attitude going on, and I didn't know what to do there. And so I just said, I'm going to do this one thing. And I just decided, okay, I'm going to come home 10 minutes early from work. And instead of coming home and saying hi and then going into my house and shutting the door, come home 10 minutes early, I'm going to walk up their stairs, sit down on their porch, and I'm going to hang out for 10 minutes. So I tried this. That was a long walk up those stairs with a lot of staring at me and a very awkward moment when I just sat down next to some new friends. There was some smoke that was swallowed in that moment. You know what I'm saying? It was awkward, but it's nothing that ABC won't fix, right? A little Michael throwing it. No, I'm just kidding. That wasn't the ABC crew right there. A little different crew right there. But I walk up and it was initially awkward, but you know what? It's amazing how quick a couple times of doing that broke down barriers that were in between that relationship. And, you know, you think somebody is so far from you, but guess what? When you take a step of faith, you don't realize how close they actually are. Simple step of faith, just to be known and to know somebody, it changes the course of relationship, doesn't it? This is not hard stuff, but this is hard stuff, isn't it? I get it. Yeah, that's easy. I got it. But do you actually get it? Do you actually do it? Do you walk up that stairwell? Do you cross that awkward threshold? And listen, I don't need to control anything in my neighborhood, but you know what I want? I want some influence. And when you are known by somebody and when you know somebody, you know what? It gives you a voice. That's all I'm asking. Because you know what? God has made us prophets for his kingdom. to call into existence those things that did not exist before. Just give me some influence, God. And guess what? He has made you a prophet in your neighborhood. But no matter what you want to do or no matter how God has placed you or set you or anointed you, if you don't get to know somebody, your influence will go to waste. What threshold do you need to cross? What boundary do you need to walk over? We're called to step across boundaries, to pursue others around us. What comfort zone do you need to break through to apply the word today? I think of, I saw Michael Olin come in earlier. I think of Michael and Felicia Olin, who are part of Barracks Row and have been here for so many years, and the example that they are to me in this area. And they are just constantly throwing parties for people. They're constantly engaged in the local school and doing book clubs, and they're having our production team over, and they're throwing parties for different missional ideas, and they're constantly at work. And you know what? Now we got to reinvest them in Romania, and I'm so happy for them, and I'm so sad for us. And we're going to miss you guys, Michael and Felicia. We're going to miss your family. But you know what? We're going to miss them so much because they are known, because they have come to know others. They're an example to us. I think of another reminder of this is an NCCer, Justine, who recently shared her story and gave me permission to share it. Justine had struggled with deep depression to the point of suicide. And when she moved to D.C., she felt so intimidated by the city. And here's what she said. She said, "I fell back into depression and anxiety, and my anxiety was the worst it's ever been. I wouldn't leave the house or even leave my room." But then she found community. She said, "If it wasn't for the small group I've been a part of and all of their prayers, I guarantee you I would still be there. Kate Farrer has been a huge part of it as well. Our friendship is definitely a God-given one. She's been a huge encouragement in my life. God has shown me his love through her. He's put me on her heart, and so many times she would text me when I needed the encouragement the most. I had major breakthrough this past year. I honestly can't remember the last time I've been this genuinely happy." Notice this about Jesus. He did more than just give the Sermon on the Mount, right? He made getting to know the needs of those around him, he made it paramount. He wept with his friends. He prayed and fasted for his people. He walked roads with strangers. He got to know others. He gave his life. He hung out with the lepers. The people that nobody would touch, he touched. The people that nobody knew or would get to know, those are the people that he got to know. We've replaced being with each other for reading about each other. We're called to be transparent with those around us, to be open. How are we being transparent? How are we being open? How are we being hospitable to the relationships that God has placed in our pathway? Our missionaries in Greece, Tony and Jamie Sebastian, they're such a beautiful example of playing this out. And they turn the mundane into mission. And so when they go out, when they go to the grocery store, for instance, they go every day at the same time to the same line to the same clerk. It's kind of an inconvenient thing for them. And sometimes it's a longer line, but they're not just going to get groceries. They're going to build a relationship. They pray over their dry cleaner. When's the last time you prayed for your dry cleaner? They go to the same lunch cafe so they can get to know their waiter and get to know their cook. Do you see your interactions as transactional or as relational? Do you just use others for what they can do for you? Or do you get to know them and build a relationship with them? Let's just take inventory for a minute. Can we do this? Can we just stop right now and take inventory of our life and maybe some categories? When you think about finances, you have an investment portfolio, right? So think about your life as a relational portfolio. Let's look at the different categories. You've got your neighborhood. When you go into your neighborhood, do you just pass by your neighbors? Do you actually get to know them? When you go to your workplace, do you actually know personal things about the people that work 5 and 10 feet away from you? When you go to your home, are you praying for those that God has placed in your home? At church, are you invested and generous in relationships at church with people around you? And maybe you're here today and you say, yeah, why aren't people around me investing in me or generous in me? No, I'm talking to you specifically. When's the last time you've invited somebody to lunch that sits near you, or you've done something generous for somebody around you? Are you engaged in small group or engaged in a ministry? What about in your community? Do you invest in relationships with people at your gym, or people in your school, or people at the school, or at your pool, or those places that you go to? What about Samaria? The places that maybe you don't want to go to or haven't been to. Are you building relationships with people that are not like you? Are you investing in people who have needs around you? As a church, we serve friends experiencing homelessness on Wednesday nights over at Ebenezer's Coffee House. We have a homemade dinner and a study there. And on Sundays, we go out to Union Station and we pass out lunches and get to know people. We do countless things. We go over to the Pregnancy Center, the Capitol Hill Pregnancy Center. We go over to the Youth Services Center. Are you investing in the DC Dream Center? There are so many ways that you can plug into and step out into Samaria and be a part of. You'll actually see emails of people right behind me. If you're interested in stepping out and investing in building relationships, maybe with people who you would not otherwise build or invest in. So take inventory of your categories, of your relationships. And now, what's the point of action for you? Okay, kind of got a landscape here. But now, what do you do from this sermon, from this service today? What's that point of action? So maybe it's just starting a prayer list. Like, what's your top five or your top three people that you just need to start praying for? When Nina and I moved into our neighborhood, we started to make a grid as we got to know people, and we would write down their names, and then we'd write down some information about them, and then we'd write down an experience we had with them or a prayer need that we could be praying for them. But that was kind of a prayer list for us. It was our neighborhood grid where we were filling in dots of points of relationship that we could start. What is that step that you need to take? Maybe it's taking a transactional interaction that you have with somebody, your barista or your dry cleaner or your postman, that you need to take and add some intention to that. What if you just did this? What if the next time you ask that person what you can be praying for them about? That's kind of simple, but it's kind of scary, isn't it? What if you take that step of faith and just see what the Lord does with that? Maybe it's this week you need to invite somebody to lunch. What's your point of action today? Jesus was incarnational. He was relational, but he was also sacrificial. It's the prepositional gospel, coming to, being with, and dying for. Jesus didn't show up and just hang out with people. No, he poured himself out. Here's what the scriptures say in John chapter 15, 13. It says, greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. It's the same Greek word for love that is used in our passage. It's the word agape. And it's not a passive word. It's not an abstract thought. This is an action word. It doesn't feel patient. It is patient. It doesn't feel things or think about things. It does things. Love is not the absence of conflict, but it's the presence of action. And Jesus, he gives us this picture, this metaphor, before we even get to this scripture, right before this passage, in the beginning of John chapter 13. It's in his last moments on earth that Jesus comes and he's with his disciples. And remember, they go and have dinner, right? And it's called the Last Supper. And so they go and they're eating dinner, and right in the middle of the meal, Jesus gets up and he takes off his outer garment. And he takes and he sets it aside, and then he does something crazy. He takes a towel And he takes that towel and he puts it around his waist. And then you know what he does? He gets down low. This is a master talking to his disciples. And Jesus gets down low. In that culture, you didn't take the lowly position. Now, it was common hospitality practice to wash feet. But Jesus does this. He gets down low and he begins to wash the feet of his disciples. It was common practice. But it was for the servants to do. It was not common practice for a master, for a rabbi to wash the feet of his disciples. But he breaks all the cultural norms in this one moment, one of his last moments on earth. He gets down low because he's trying to teach them something, right? He's trying to teach them something significant. And he gets down low and Peter says, Jesus, you're going to wash my feet? Jesus says, you don't understand this right now, but you're going to understand it later. He says, no. And Jesus says, you have no part with me unless you take part in this. And he's teaching him a lesson. He's teaching him humility, to lay his leadership down. And it's not just humility for Jesus, it's humility for the disciples, isn't it? Can you imagine if Jesus was here or if I came down and if I started washing your feet, you would feel so uncomfortable, wouldn't you? That would just be awkward. Jesus, and it's got to be this awkward moment, but Jesus understands that it's a two-way reciprocal relationship, that some humility for the disciples could do them some good. So he gets down low. He lays down his life. He lays down his leadership before those that he is serving, and he teaches them something about humility. And this is how Jesus would be known. This is how he would be known within community. How are we known in our community? How's our church known in our community? I'd love to think that we're known for our love in this community, for the way that we serve our city. I hope that we are. I hope we're known for the way that we care for those who have needs, for the way that we care for those who are without homes right now. I hope we're known for people that love on children and love on our kids. I hope that's how we're known. But I've come to realize this, that it's not NCC that impacts our community. It's NCCers that impacts our community. Love is not an institutional word. It's a personal word, isn't it? It's how you love our community. It's how you love our community. It's how you love our community. It's how I love our community. And collectively, maybe we can love enough in our community. It's Ashley Anderson taking her day off and going every day off to be with a refugee family. It's Brandon Harder, our prayer leader, who bikes across town at 10 p.m. at night to change somebody's tire. He doesn't even have a car, but he's going to help somebody else change a tire. It's Kate who takes a week of vacation from the business that she is an entrepreneur of. She takes a week of her vacation to go serve at Laces Camp, serving children in this city. Those are examples of people stepping out of sacrificial love that we can become known for. A guy named Scott Dimmick. This coming Friday, people will go and celebrate his life and celebrate what he's at. He just passed away. Most of you wouldn't know his name, and he would like it that way. But Scott, we would not be in the DC Dream Center if it weren't for Scott Dimmick and his investment there. And he's one of the founders of the Southeast White House. And he gave his life, and hundreds and thousands of people have been impacted by Scott's life. And just an amazing man, a hero to those around him. And I tell you what, we're about to have the grand opening about a month at the DC Dream Center. And you know what? Most of you don't know him associated with it, but that's how he lived his life and his ministry. He would never take the credit. He'd always allow others to take the glory, and he'd allow others to step up and to shine, and he would put others in front of himself. That's the way that he lived his life. But when we open the Dream Center, you better believe that Scott is known in community. He is known by those who have loved him and allowed them to step into the light he has loved so dearly by his family, by his friends, by the community that is all around him. I got to sit with Scott a week and a half ago, sat down, and I've never seen someone so at peace. He knew he was dying. He knew he was about to die. And yet he had such a peace in his heart about this. He was just at rest because he simply used his life to know Christ, to interact with other people around him, and to be known by others. That's how he gave his life. May God help us to be known, to be not transactional but relational in our interactions, to be known and to seek to know others. May God help us to step out and to reach out and to love like Christ loved. Amen.